Hi, welcome to the Brown and Happy podcast. In our time together, I will share what it means to be brown and happy. For many of us, everything looks good on paper, but we're still not happy and living fulfilled lives. It's time to change this, and I can help. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Gayal. Hello, lovely ladies. We have a really fun guest today, someone that I had the pleasure and opportunity to get to know because she is one of my former clients. Dr. Cipralada is a psychiatrist, but also she's an entrepreneur. And that's something I'm going to let her share with you guys. She's mama to four kids. Yes, you heard that right. And she's really an amazing person. So I love when people reach out to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'd love to share my journey and my story, because one of the things, especially I find in our community, in our culture, is even if things are going well, or if they're not going well, we kind of stick to ourselves. And not doing that and opening up and sharing is healing for us, but also provides community and support to other women who think that they have a unique unicorn situation. So, Cipra, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Cipralada. You did a great job introducing me. I am a mom of four. I'm based out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm also the co-founder and co-CEO of Luna Joy Health.
Tell me a little bit about how you kind of found me and like why you started working with me, because my understanding is that you were already on this journey to start your business, but you know, you wanted something more.
So I think it was one of your emails that you had sent, and there was something in there about perfectionism, I think, that I really resonated with. And I think one experience that I've had since residency, even around like building my own private practice and then starting this company, is that often like mentorship and coaching is just really powerful and can be very valuable. And so as I was reading your content, I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. You know, especially because I was newly venturing into a space where I was rapidly learning and rapidly scaling. I kind of thought about like what all the blockers are. And there's always lots of blockers, I think, in every different phase of life for me, you know, whether for me, it was becoming a mom, becoming a second, third, fourth time mom, starting a practice and then starting a company. And it was right around the time that we not only started the company, but launched the company and we're experiencing good growth and getting investment. And I just started to recognize that, you know, building a company is really hard, but the hardest thing is often just working with mindset, kind of recognizing the limitations and recognizing where me as an entrepreneur, I was getting kind of in front of my own progress. And so I thought it would be helpful to get in touch with someone who had great messaging, looked like me, you know, felt like they had a similar cultural set of circumstances as me to work through some of those things.
Yeah, thank you. It's very interesting to me because when I started my journey, like I think I talked to you about this, that nobody looked like me. And so I found myself explaining a lot about like why I think and do the things the way I do. Like I kind of did that with everyone. And what I love is like, we can just skip over that part. Like, I get it. I get why you want to do things a certain way, that you push yourself, that there is like this constant like drive. And we attach a lot of our self-worth to what we're producing and our productivity and all those things. So I love that. But I'd like to hear a little bit about how did you go from being a full-time psychiatrist to coming up with this like really unique idea? Because I think you glow up when every time you talk about this. And I think the audience would love to learn, like, how do you follow something that started as an idea and try something new, even if it's outside our accepted career paths?
Yeah, I love that question. So, you know, basically, I think that as physicians, we're actually quite lucky because there's lots of problems all around us. You know, I've been in this entrepreneurial community, especially after going through YC, where there are really smart, intelligent people engaged in solving problems, and often they're looking for a problem. And I think just by the nature of the work that we do, we we get an idea of a lot of the problems that our patients face, that we face, problems with the system, problems with medicine. And so my idea really came from like a combination of both my personal and my professional experience. So I'm a psychiatrist, really focused in reproductive psychiatry. When I started my own private practice back in 2015, I was seeing a lot of pregnant and postpartum women. And I, in 2014, also had a high-risk pregnancy. I had monodi twins. You know, I was seeing maternal fetal medicine and all of these different doctors, and it was a very scary pregnancy journey, but it was kind of an even more difficult postpartum journey where I had postpartum anxiety myself. I really didn't feel like I had resources, didn't know how to get help, how to access help. And I was like a trained reproductive psychiatrist with a lot of resources and access, just given the fact that I was happily married and had a supportive spouse, and my parents are physicians and my brother is a physician. So I kind of thought about that, you know, really scary, dark time in my life that went on for way longer than it should have. And I had two more babies after that. So I had two singletons and had similar but different experiences with both of those pregnancies. And so it was kind of a combination of my own journey into motherhood plus seeing pregnant and postpartum patients in the office every single day, where I started to pick up upon some really common themes. One is that we prioritize medical care, which is very important, but we have so many women that need help around pregnancy and postpartum depression and anxiety. We really only talk about postpartum. It's not something that magically comes up at 6 weeks postpartum. Usually we can detect signs and symptoms during pregnancy. By the time women make it over to me in my practice, in my old practice, it was like sometimes 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years after they first started developing symptoms and first started struggling. And so just after seeing this day in, day out, day in and day out, you know, I was kind of in this place in my life where I had everything that I worked for. You know, I had a very stable, very lucrative, cash-based private practice. I had really good work-life balance. I could be home for all of my four kids at, you know, 2 p.m. And I was doing all the things that I thought that I had been working to for all of these years, but this problem kind of kept on gnawing at me that, you know, there's solutions. It's like I have this unique lens into exactly what the problem is. And we always talk about problems, especially in mental health, is huge and unsolvable, but I really felt like this can be solved. This is a combination of like a technology and a people issue. And I just felt so clearly like I could see what the solution was. And I started talking to my sister-in-law, who's also a child and adolescent psychiatrist, who's had a lot of the same observations that I have, especially looking at it from a child mental health perspective. And so we just decided, you know, I think that there was, it's one of the few places in my life, there was almost no perfectionism involved. We kept on like waiting for a good time, and we were in the middle of the pandemic. I had four kids at home. She had two kids ages like two and under at home. She was just recently postpartum. And we were like, why are we waiting? Let's start doing like some of what we know how to do. Let's start implementing some of this. And I think that that was probably like the biggest pathway forward, by just doing and, you know, taking the steps without wondering whether or not it would be successful. It kind of just took a life of its own. And it's been a wild journey since then.
That is so fun to not wait, right? I totally understand that, because we have this sense of like delayed gratification, especially professionally speaking, because like, of course, we talk about the checklist a lot, right? Like we've all done the checklist: study, good grades, extracurriculars, college, blah, 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 blah. Right. And whatever your journey is, like, yes, we both happen to be physicians, but you know, whatever you went into, you did delay gratification. And that is so common and deeply rooted in our culture, you know, because if you work hard in the beginning, then you'll be able to, it'll pay off later. Right. And that is the most bullshit story, honestly, like that we are fed. And I think that if we didn't do the work on us, we keep feeding it to the next generation. Right. And I'm loving what's happening now, and this movement of there's more and more of us like willing to ask for help. Like, I mean, you're a psychiatrist, right? So like someone would be like, well, why does a psychiatrist need like mental health support? Like, what about that? Like, tell me, like, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think it's, I think this is part of like framing where mental health falls in physical health. Like, if a GI physician needed a liver transplant, like they would need a liver transplant. It's not just that because they're a GI physician, they could fix their liver, right? If an orthopedic surgeon broke his bone, he would have to kind of go get his bone set. And I think the more that we can frame mental health as like this process that happens, it's a thing that, you know, between genetics and between what happens in our environment, there's like clinical processes that happen, not to clinicalize it too much. That then need a certain type of treatment, and thinking your way out of it is not a thing. Pulling yourself up by your bootstraps is not a thing. Like actually using evidence-based approach, which is, you know, therapy is the CBT therapy. What type of therapy can we use if needed? What kind of medications can be used? And the more we depersonalize mental health, I think that is the whole goal and that's the whole idea. And I think for me, it was like a very clear moment in my postpartum journey where it was like, this is not something I'm going to be able to figure out on my own. And it probably took me a lot more time because my brain kept on doing the rationalization thing where I was like, I'm a psychiatrist. Like, I have books upon books on CBT, you know, sitting right here. I've studied it, I've trained for it, I've done this with hundreds of patients. Like, why can't I just figure this out? And then realize, like, just like I tell my patients, it's not something you can think your way out of. Just like go do the treatment. Go do the things that you need to do to get better.
The way that you're talking about like mental health, like, well, technically, I'm a pediatrician, I'm an integrated pediatrician. I should be like so great at parenting, right? And that's not true. Like, we don't know what we don't know, right? And that is so important to express, important to be aware of. And a lot of times it's like we don't want to accept it, right? But it's fascinating to me because, like, I've had so many psychiatrists that I work with, you know? And even when I was coaching you, there's things that you're like, oh my God, I didn't even notice. I didn't realize I was doing that. And that's the thing. Like, we all only have stayed like in our lane and we have our blinders on. And it's so helpful to have a third person to be like, oh, well, why did you do that way? And
Yeah, and I think not to be too dark, but I think like data really speaks for itself and statistics really speak for itself. And I think that this is like a bit of a myth in the physician community that, you know, you can fix your own mental health care. You don't need to go and get treatment. Like therapy is not really a thing. It's just something that you tell your patients to do. But then at the same time, when we have statistics like female physicians are 4 times at risk for suicide compared to the general population. You know, we have very clear and stark data that suggests the opposite of, I think, what we as physicians often repeat to ourselves and each other, whether it's overtly or covertly.
I do think that because we're thinkers and we're trained to be thinkers and doers, we like skip over like actually processing, understanding, accepting, and experiencing like what's happening in our world. And like, you can't think your way out of this. You can't do your way out of this. And so one of the things that it's really fun for me, and I don't know if you recall this, but a lot of times I would ask, like, what are you feeling? And like, you guys respond, including myself, my coach would say the same thing, is I would give my thoughts more. Well, I'm thinking this, or I'm doing this. And so the work that I think is so valuable is able to like process what the emotion is and be able to name it. And I do think that for me, I wasn't conditioned to allow space for that in my world to have feelings, you know, and it's almost a sign of like weakness in a way that, oh, you're feeling this and therefore that held you, right? Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like it is so true. And in medicine, we're taught to pathologize too, right? There's like good things and bad things, and like a staph infection is a bad thing, and a healing wound is a good thing. And that's then when we do become a little bit more aware of emotions, it kind of feels like another project often, like anger, bad emotion, sadness, bad emotion, you know, all of these sorts of things in this place of just like sitting with your feelings and allowing them to pass, and just being kind of like you're part of a wave in the ocean, and you can like take it in and then you can let it go. And that's actually, this is simplifying so much, but that's actually often the way, like through something, as opposed to And I work with physicians in my practice. There's a lot of like block, 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 block. And the more we block, 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 just the harder that these things actually are to deal with, whether it's like grief or trauma or tragedy or just difficult feelings or struggle, shame, all of these sorts of things. And so I do see a lot of that binary too around, oh, it's a negative emotion. Like this is like the pathway. This is what we do with the negative emotion. How do I just make it go away, or how do I make it not a thing, as opposed to like, this is all within range of normal. How do we like modulate? How do we live with our imperfect selves, with our imperfect emotions and these things in this imperfect life?
What would you say is the methods you used to avoid the emotion or avoid doing stuff? Like, what were the kind of your go-to things?
Well, I mean, I think this is something that I'm still constantly looking out for. I think that there's a lot of like intellectualization, and I think there's a lot of like busying. I think that, as physicians, there's some core values around hard work and putting your head down. And I still notice actively if there's something that I'm feeling stressed about, or is unresolved, or I'm feeling nervous about, like my go-to is to overschedule myself. So that at the end of the day, I don't have to really feel or those bad or negative feelings, or that, question or really deal with the uncertainty. I can just kind of hang my hat on, like, I worked really hard today. And sometimes after a couple of weeks of doing that, like scheduling myself for back-to-back meetings or skipping lunch for, 6 days in a row, I'm like, what am I trying to avoid here? Like, if I did give myself space, oh yeah, I have to deal with the fact that I'm actually feeling really anxious about, firing someone, for instance, or, doing a hard thing, or whatever those things are that I feel like I could mess up or I could fail. And I mean, it's a lot of avoidance, but avoidance that's baked in these things that historically have been very productive and praised and gotten us to good places.
Yeah, so this is what I find a lot of you guys do is, and myself included, but is like exactly what you said. We overwork and we think it's a good thing, right? Because we're actually working, we're making money, we're helping people, whatever it is, right? We're working towards a goal, but when you're not allowing yourself to actually live in the moment and ask and question, hey, I have this pit in my stomach, what is it really about? Right. And some people, and I also find that we use social media, screens, food, alcohol, like some people use drugs. Like it just happens, right? That they do that. One thing that I think is the funniest thing that people we rationalize using to escape our like true emotions is exercise. Well, it's good because I go in on the Peloton. So technically it's a good thing, right? But not if you're feeling something and you're trying to avoid that something. So yeah, and thank you for sharing that part. So there is one thing that I wanted to bring up that you brought up too was like that time, like feeling pressure about time and giving up your time and things like that. So if someone were to say, hey, listen, like that's great that you did that, but I don't have time to spend on me, getting the support that I need, like what would you say to them?
I mean, I think that the way people spend time is really a reflection of their priorities. And I think it's like kind of a good analysis or like a regular audit to do with yourself. Okay, so I think I want these things. How is how I'm spending my time aligning with those priorities? And so if you think that you're trying to like grow and be more healthy or be productive in a different venture, go off in a direction that's a little uncharted, and then you look at how you're spending your time, and you're spending your time doing the same things you've always done, or you're spending your time doing something that actually diminishes your power for creativity or diminishes your feelings around, being able to take risks, whether it's like the people that you're spending time with or the job that you're spending time with that can be particularly stifling. I think that that is like the cold, hard reality that we all need to face. And we all have these stories that we tell ourselves, like, It's really interesting to me, right? I, as a psychiatrist, get to have the privilege of sitting with thousands of people and listening to their stories of, their actual lives and the stories they go on in their head and, what things it is that they tell themselves and they reinforce. And just because we told ourselves something does not make it real. This is like a big journey in finding out your thought is not necessarily real. And this is something I think, like, no matter how aware of it you are, going back and checking and making sure that you're actually aligned, not for someone else, not to check off a checklist or say that you like did the thing, but just to really see, like, are you making progress towards what you want to do? And are is your time priorities reflecting that? And being really honest with yourself if it's not, and then making like immediate shifts. I think we also get into a lot of, well, if this, then that thinking, like when the kids are older, then I will, if I had a better mother-in-law, then I could, whatever those things are. And I think that those are like fun traps that we fall into. And the more we recognize these little booby traps all over our brains, and you're kind of like, am I aligned or am I not? And if I'm not aligned, like, what's stopping me from taking action? And if it's a whole list of reasons, what's stopping me from removing those blockers? I think that that's a really honest conversation that we all need to have with ourselves.
I'm like having a proud mama moment right here because like everything you're saying, I'm like, yes, that's exactly it, you know? And also we can't see our own stuff. And so like logically speaking, like we understand this, and then also being willing to be open and vulnerable to allow for someone to help us, like be like, oh, I didn't even realize that I was overworking. I didn't even realize that I was, you know, telling myself there's a right answer or there's a better way, or I don't know yet, you know. And I think that having that support, especially as I'm, you know, in my own businesses too, I'm always like, okay, like what am I not seeing, right? What am I not seeing that I'm doing? And whenever I brought it to my coaches, I was always like taken aback by that. I thought I was doing it right, you know, because I spent time, I did these things, I thought these things, and they were like, no, but like, what is your belief? What is the reason you're doing it? And what are the barriers that you're creating for you? And I think that we were able to work on that for yourself because, man, your business is doing so amazing. You had amazing milestones while we were working together. Tell us a little bit about like what was your own barriers in your own space, and like, you know, how did, you know, work being willing to look at them help you?
So I think there were a couple of barriers as I was, pursuing the health tech route and starting a company and really thinking about how both technology and people can play a role and thinking about, what does it mean for OBGYNs to have integrated behavioral health care and how do we get referrals happening seamlessly and how do we make care truly accessible? I mean, I think there were a lot of like certainly logistical barriers, which actually were the easiest part. A lot of it was like mental barriers around, like, do I want to be trying to do partnerships or business or agreements with other doctors? Like, that felt really against the way that I think about medicine, where you just like do, and you don't really need to think about like what you're. What financially makes sense or what economically makes sense. But it was a lot of my own thinking and a lot of my own thinking too around how psychiatry is often devalued, right? In medicine, it's like no one wants to call the psychiatrist until everyone needs the psychiatrist and they need to be their stat. It's kind of like mental health is never really a thing until immediately it's a thing. And then, everyone kind of needs it. And so because there is that general, it's not a thing, it's really a thing, it's not a thing, I need you here yesterday. In medicine, I kind of worried about like that same dynamic coming into business. And it's there. I mean, I see it all the time. I see a lot of like interest from OBGYN providers. And then I see also a lot of kind of disinterest until like immediately there's a need. And so it's kind of been interesting to steer the ship steadily despite whatever the waves are, the zeitgeist is of the moment. But I think the other part to all of this was I recognized, I think, pretty early on that, when you're starting a new business and when it's a venture-backed business, there are all sorts of things that can kill your business. And as a physician, you are used to looking for like all the reasons something can die, right? All the reasons something bad can happen. And so I think going into it, I was very aware of all of the reasons that we wouldn't be successful. And then I started thinking like, well, that was great for, you know, my medical life, but if I'm going to not only run this business, lead this business, expand this great business, grow this business into a multi-million billion-dollar business, if I'm only focused on all the pathology, we're never going to get to the good stuff. We're never going to even tap into the possibilities of what preventative mental health care could mean, or preventative mental health care for women, or like actual seamless integrated behavioral health care, right? We can't even get there. So I think I realized pretty early on that probably the biggest danger to the business was like myself, my mindset, and my own growth around it. And I think this came from a lot of like reading books like The Who, Not the How, and E-Myth, and it, all of it basically centers around different aspects of mindset, and coming to that conclusion where I was like, well, if I'm, you know, spending venture capital dollars on building a team and doing this and building a company and a tech integration and flow and EMR integrations and all this stuff, and I'm spending like little to no time on my mindset, I don't know how far we're going to go. And I'm lucky that I had a co-founder who's also a psychiatrist, who's also an entrepreneur, who's, you know, amazing in so many different ways, who had a lot of this insight around we need to be working on our mindset. I mean, I remember from like the first week of Y Combinator, she was like, let's go see a coach. And I was like, oh my God, we're working 15 hours a day. I'm, you know, across the country from my four kids in the middle of the pandemic. And all we're trying to do is like sprint here. You want me to see a coach with you? Like,
yeah.
What? But I think results also speak for themselves. Like taking the time to work on that back end, I think has made us way more successful on the front end.
Yeah. And I think it was helpful that she was already bought into like the value mm-hmm. of like having the coaching and having the support. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's good that you guys did this separately, because everyone has their own personal barriers, you know, and to be able to have that space to like express that and grow. But seriously, like you've done such amazing work, and I'm so proud of like even like what you created, right? I remember before you go into negotiations for like really big deals, you're just like needed to clear your mind. And that was like so good, because when you came out of it and you texted me, I had to look up what all the numbers meant, you know, like this is what happened. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I kind of wanted to, you know, give you that credit, right? You did your part by reaching out to me. You could have, I remember this, Jackie, I had my pick of people, you know, and I wanted to work with someone who got me and the way that I like have been living my life, right? And I think there's something about our fusion generation where mm-hmm. we're trying to take a little bit of the past and a little bit of like the future we want, and trying to figure out our own journey and our own path. And one of the biggest things, and I've heard you say this before, it's like we talk about generational wealth. I want to focus on the generational wealth in loving ourselves and mental support, in like self-kindness, the lack, like not doubting ourselves, not judging ourselves. Like that's so wealthy, you know, to give them that. That's something that we didn't have always. And to be able to be like, yes, you have this too available to you, in addition to money, in addition to real estate, in addition to like, you know, all these education and business assets. So what a gift that we can give to our children. But also we don't have to wait for that, right? We don't have to wait for a crisis to happen. We don't have to wait for when they're older. We don't have to wait when I have time. If you do not have time to give yourself 45 minutes every week, then this work, like we talk about in psychiatry, it's like this just started yesterday. Like we should have done this a long time ago. It's okay. Let's start today.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand what you're saying when people are like, I need it ASAP.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think that this is like, I know I already said it, so I don't want to be redundant, but this really does come back to being really honest about your priorities. I mean, I think I hear probably like 5 times a week, like, you have 4 kids, you're running a business. I still have my private practice. On the side, I, you know, run the private practice psychiatry Facebook group, and like, in addition to many other things. And they're like, how do you make time to do all of these things? And it's just priority based. Like, I have 4 kids, all 4 of them are priorities, so they all get time. You know, it's just how it works. And like, I think we all think about time as this really finite construct where it's like you can do these three things or you can do two things and that's how you fit your day. But I think the more we're all flexible about that and the more that we recognize there's many different ways to serve the different priorities that you have, it's not often like the fact that you can or can't have something. It's like making the decision that it's important to you. And that's where the behavior change comes, right? I don't have time, truly, honestly, I don't have time for my four kids, but I have them all here and they're a priority. And so they happen, you know, I figure it out.
Yeah, because you make decisions ahead of time. Okay. So last question, you've been such a trooper. I love you like sharing, being so honest and stuff, is like for someone who is not so aware, someone who is not like, you know, where you are, where you were able to make this decision with such ease. And they're on the fence about like prioritizing themselves, right? Prioritizing what they value. Like, what would you want to say to that person?
Yeah. And I want to make a quick correction about like making these decisions with ease. I don't think that these decisions are easily made. And I don't think that we should have the expectation that it's easy to make these decisions that are often very different from the decisions that we've made in the past. But what I will say, and I don't know if this is the answer that you were looking for, Payal, what I will say is if you're struggling with making different decisions than you have in the past, or you're struggling with making a decision that feels wild, whether that's getting into coaching or starting a venture or doing something outside of what you usually do, look at who you're spending time with. Because if you spend time with people who, and everyone has their own choices, everyone has their own lifestyle, but if you spend time with people who reinforce the idea that the world is scary, that you're going to get sued for everything, that, you know, physicians can't make it outside of medicine, that physicians don't know how to add two and two together, are really bad with business, that's what you will continue to keep on thinking. And we are very much social creatures. We pick up upon the energy that's all around us. We pick up upon our thoughts that other people have. We make them our own, whether or not we recognize it. And so if you're feeling stuck or you're feeling like you want to do things differently from the way that you're doing right now, say just get out. Don't even make a commitment to anything. Just start meeting new people. Just get new people in your life. You don't have to be best friends with them. It's kind of like trying on hats. Like you spend time with someone new and you hear about their thoughts and their adventure and what they have or haven't done and the barriers they've broken down. And all of a sudden, I think it's just starts feeling like things are a bit more possible. And we all get focused on like, well, how is it possible? Well, she has a great nanny. I don't have that. It's not possible. And so when your brain does that, to be like, pause, we don't need to figure out how yet. We just like need to be in a space and around people that promote that like kind of creative, the light, the world is your playground and it's open and you know, you can make whatever you want of your life. So say, figure out really who you're spending time with.
That's the perfect answer. And I love that you talked about that because that's so important, right? That your community, right? Who are you surrounding yourself with? And I've noticed that the people I used to be around before and like the group that I was like, you know, like at work or whatever it was, like even socially, those people, not everyone has made it to this chapter of my life, you know, and this journey of growth, personal development, entrepreneur, all the things, right? And I think that just allowing yourself to reevaluate and make new decisions, right? Is okay. And you can give yourself that permission to say, well, just because I did it one way for so long doesn't mean I can't do it different. I really have the best community. I love being around people who also value the things that I value. And it comes with you putting yourself out there, right? If you're going to stay in your own cocoon and you're not going to grow, how are you going to know what's out there? So that's lovely. Well, thank you so much, Zipper, for coming on. This was so fun. As you guys know, I do not, you know, have like a plan for when I do my podcast. I let it flow and let it be organic because I think the truth comes out when we do things that way. And we just all want everyone to be really honest and open because that's what I'm trying to do myself, right? So thanks so much, Zipra.
It's good talking again, Payal.
Okay, bye guys. Have a lovely day.
Hey, if you're finally ready to start being happy, I invite you to join my list. This is where you'll have access to all my workshops, coaching, and pearls. Just head to my website, www.payal.com. payalgahl.com. That's payalgahal. And join my list. I can't wait to meet you.